Hi, everybody. This is Geraldo Rivera reporting Roadkill, my podcast, The View from the Middle of the Road and The View from Here. As I look out at the vast landscape of restaurants and other service-oriented businesses, is that our programs designed to help those in need are backfiring. They are making it so easy, so plush, so lucrative to stay home and collect benefits that there are not enough people showing up to fill the jobs that are available increasingly everywhere. Here's Roadkill.
Roadkill with Geraldo Rivera.
Erica and I went to Pinecrest. We were killing time waiting for Soul, our 15-year-old. We went into four restaurants, peeked into two others. So we took a survey of six of the restaurants at Pinecrest, which is the newish high-end mall here on the east side. The restaurants were more than half empty. But when we asked the maitre d', or the person in charge at the front desk, could we be seated for a quick dinner? They said, no, we can't seat anymore. And they had a sign right there at the maitre d's podium. Due to COVID and COVID relief and unemployment, much of our staff has not reported back to work, and we cannot seat you because we can't serve you. So it just seems to me, and I don't know a lot. Erica and I sat at one place, kind of a semi-pizza place, I forget the name of it, in Pinecrest. Nice spot. And got to talking to the manager, who was also the bartender, who told us that they weren't as bad off as many of the places because they kept much of their staff during the pandemic, but most people did not, and now they're attempting to hire folks to work at these restaurants, and they cannot. Why? Because they are all on unemployment insurance. Unemployment. Insurance. Unemployment insurance. Insuring you that if you lose your job, that you have enough money to get by. It's insurance. But because the Biden administration, in its wisdom, and part of this plethora of federal spending, he's thrown money at every problem, like it or not. Many people do. Some don't. There is a perverse phenomenon where you make as much money staying home as you do going to work. Now, that is bad governance. I'm sorry, I don't care whether you're right or left or red or blue, Democrat or Republican. If you have a public policy, the net result of which is to discourage participation in the system other than to scam the system, it's not even a scam, it's legal. They encourage it. They've thrown this money at people. Why work? You can stay on unemployment all summer. It just seems to me that this is an example. One example, but an important example, and one that everyone listening can verify for themselves if you go to restaurants or anything where really you need intense customer service. And the person doing the serving is generally, whatever it is, food or clothing, whatever it is generally getting paid at the toward the bottom of the spectrum. So what's the minimum wage in Ohio, Rob? It's under $8, right?
Actually, it's $8.80 an hour.
$8.80. Okay. So what if you get tips?
That tipped minimum wage is, I believe, $4.40 an hour.
So $8.80 an hour, that's all you get. I mean, minus taxes. So you can really make as much or nearly as much staying home and collecting unemployment as long as your unemployment insurance has been extended as it has because of COVID. So what do you do? Now, one of the things you can do, obviously, is pay people more money. $8.80 is not a lot of money. And if you want to encourage someone to work rather than staying home, maybe you want to think about paying more than $8.80. Maybe you want to think about paying $15 an hour as the federal government now mandates for all federal contractors.
Geraldo, real quick, though, and to put this in perspective here, I did some math. At $880 an hour, if you work 40 hours a week and you don't work 39 hours ever, you're working complete full-time, no vacation, you're making about $18,300. The Ohio poverty line is $25,000. So you're a good $7,000 underneath if you're making just straight minimum wage and don't take 1 minute off.
So what do you say, Rob, as a person who would be affected by a mandated increase, a substantial increase in unemployment and minimum wage? What do you say to the restaurant owner who says back to you, I can't afford it?
You got to pay people more.
You have to.
And
people have to get off their asses.
Because this is going to be something that's going to affect the restaurants more than other sectors. Like if you go to Amazon or any of these big employers right now, Walmart's paying $15 an hour. You can go to one of these spots and get $15 an hour full benefits, or you can go to a restaurant and roll silverware for $4 an hour at 11 o'clock p.m., for no benefits. So, yeah, the restaurants and the bar business in general is going to have to look at the way they do things and change it. I honestly think coming out of this pandemic, one of the greatest reforms we're going to have is the reshaping of the restaurant and hospitality management industry.
I hope so. This is exploitation.
Yes,
this
it is.
This is, you know, indentured servitude. This is, I mean, those kinds of wages, you cannot in good conscience expect people to give up a life of comfort and zero responsibilities. It is a no-brainer. You have to bite the bullet. And if you have a business and you have an objection to what I'm talking about, I say that your business is not viable if you cannot afford to pay your people a living wage, and a living wage is $15 an hour. And maybe that means there's half as many restaurants later as there are now. Maybe half of the restaurants that exist now will go into obsolescence. But this is now a common experience. I bet all of you have had it, where you go to a place and you can't get served because nobody is working because they're on unemployment. It just is preposterous. And if the federal government, if the Democrats just keep throwing money and money and money, they're going to wreck the system. They're going to wreck the system. They're going to ruin a system where young people who have ambition and want to participate in the system, want to work and get ahead to achieve the American dream. The new American dream is an American slumber. It's an American scam. It's an American pass. Here, you got Netflix, you might as well stay home and watch it from morning till night, or whatever else they're watching. I can't stand Netflix. So I just want to tell you that is something that is apparent, is right here in the Cleveland area. It's everywhere. So big sports news locally, where you had the draft and it was hugely successful. And I understand the All-Star Game's coming to Cleveland. And when something big like that happens in Cleveland, did you know that the NFL draft got a 25% bigger rating than the Oscars? The draft, the draft where they pick the players who are going to play next year. I mean, that did a 12 million audience to the Oscars, did barely 9.5 million. I mean, it's wild to me. It shows how boring the Oscars were on the one hand, and how sports starved we continue to be. But speaking of sports, I was watching the Mets play the Phillies yesterday, the New York Mets and the Phillies. Now, I wanted to watch the Mets because I wanted to see what Frankie Lindor was doing. Our all-star shortstop, one of the great sluggers. We all thought that, you know, to think in terms of Derek Jeter and some of the great infielders, agile, strong, you know, multi-hundreds of millions of dollars he made in the deal when he went from the Indians to the Mets. It was so sad to watch. They are actually booing Frankie Lindor in New York. This game was in Philadelphia, where they boo all the Mets anyway. But it was so sad to watch our star, who said in an interview he was never booed in Cleveland, either by Indians fans or by rival fans. Never booed as a Cleveland Indian, and now he's getting booed as a Met. Not the least of the reasons is he's batting around 200. He had the bases loaded. He popped up. He had the bases loaded again. He got walked. You know, he's just not Frankie Lindor. And Mike Snyder, is Mike Snyder around to give us what happened to our great all-star? He went to the Big Apple, and he's choking now, and it's kind of sad to see.
Well, yes. You know, he actually was struggling at the end of last year with the Tribe, and 200 would be good for him right now. Geraldo, he's hitting 171. Now, I've not seen much of his games. He's only hit one home run, and, boy, that $341 million contract, and you're playing in New York hitting 171, you're going to hear boos. And I think Frankie's he's a great guy, great personality. But again, you're thrown into something, and a lot of hitters are struggling in the early going. We're only a month in, but man, 171 is beyond struggling.
So Mike Snyder, our sports guru and the seer, the knower of all things, have you managed to speak to either to Frankie or anyone around him to find out what's going on?
No, really not at this point. You know, I think, Geraldo, it's early in the year. There are a lot of hitters in baseball. We just had Tom Hamill on about a half hour ago. Collectively, baseball, as an average, teams are hitting, or players are hitting 230. I mean, that is ridiculously low. That's everybody combined. The Indians just played the White Sox. Abreu, last year's MVP, just barely over 200. But back to Lindor, I don't know if he's pressing or what. He might be. We've seen guys that get these huge contracts, they try to be more than that. I would think we're probably, if we're having this conversation at the end of this month, then there really is a major issue going on. I would expect him to snap out of it. He always has. But this is a real slump for him to start this season with all eyes watching in New York.
Mike Snyder, I just want to emphasize that point that Mike just made. You know, with the Daily News and the New York Post, the back pages are all the sports stories. And it's almost like when you pick up a tabloid in New York, you glance at the headline, then you turn it around to see what you really were interested in. What did the Mets do? What did the Yankees do? What did the Nets, the Knicks, whatever the New York teams are doing. And so when Frankie Lindor, and he's got that flamboyant hair, the kind of bleachy hair, which is great when you're an individual and you're doing well, but when you're stinking up the joint, it's just another thing for them to rag on. What would you, Mike Snyder, if you were coaching the Mets and you were just friends with Frankie Lindor, what would you say to him to snap out of it?
I would just say, be yourself. You know, you got here, you've earned the contract. They're not giving it to you because they only give because they had to give it to you. You got your deal. Relax. You're not going anywhere. You're here. You're signed, sealed. And I think he'll be fine ultimately. I don't know that, you know, we can debate how much is he really worth that kind of money. That's something that can be debated. But he got it, so he's worth it. But I'll tell you this, though, Geraldo. There have been players over the years that have gone to New York and they just have not dealt with it. One came to mind, a pitcher named Kenny Rogers, great pitcher in Texas. He got to New York and it got to him, what you were just suggesting, that daily headline and the tabloids. And now, of course, with social media, it's a little different, but that pressure is always going to be there.
I remember when Randy Johnson went. Wasn't it Randy Johnson that went and they took the subway and they made fun of him and then he couldn't pitch in New York anymore?
Well, yeah, there have been guys. There are other examples. Now, I'm not ready to say that Lindor really is in the prime of his career, should be really approaching it. That's another reason why he got that deal. He's still very young. So, I think let's see where we are a month from now. And if it's still below 200 at that point, then there is some real concern about him dealing with it.
Mike Snyder will follow it. Thank you very much. It was a very I won't even talk about the Cavs. I can't even watch the Cavs.
Yeah, it's rough right now.
And I look at Kevin Love and I say, boy, man, just
kind of bizarre.
Playing that. And I like him a lot. But anyway, thanks, Mike.
Okay, Geraldo, you bet.
Okay, so I know everyone wants to talk about whatever I've talked about so far today. But we're going to really concentrate on your call. So be patient, and I'll get to you. 216-578-1100. I also want to give you a heads up that, you know, we get, you know, do you have ring.com? Do you have, you know, where someone walks to your front door and this buzz thing happens and they have notifications constantly from your neighbors and they input it. So it is so disheartening to me that I sit here and I look at the ring.com notifications and they say six shots fired on Lee, four shots in Harvard. Somebody did, you know, it's just to watch the weekend violence, the tally as told through your neighbors and ring.com. That could be a TV show. Just that, just the ring notifications and then flash to the scene of someone shooting a gun in the air outside of a residence or whatever. It is amazing. But what we do not have that Chicago has is adequate real-time reporting on what happened the weekend. So in Chicago, on this point, this weekend in Chicago, 45 people were shot. 45 people were shot in Chicago. 5 people in Chicago were shot to death. 2 people in Chicago were stabbed to death. I mean, at what point is this a national emergency? At what point do Black Lives Matter? At what point do they matter, really matter? That you could have 7 dead, 5 shooting and 2 stabbings, and 45 people shot. And it's all in, one neighborhood. It's not in the whole city of Chicago. It's the south side, a little bit on the west side. It's not Chicago generally. That makes it even worse. That all of this carnage is concentrated in one neighborhood. One black neighborhood, no Black Lives Matter comment, no Democratic elected officials comment, no Joe Biden comment. Imagine if they were killed by Iranians or spacemen. Be the lead story today. And you know, it's not even on a relatively slow Monday morning, this story is not even mentioned except in Chicago. And in Chicago, it's not even on the front page. It's weird to me. 9:30, the next segment, I'll take all your calls. I'll just take one right now in Willoughby Hills. Kathleen. Hi, Kathleen. What's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Geraldo. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Same here.
How are you this morning?
Thank you. I'm fine. Thank you.
Good. So we raised our children in Shaker, my husband and I, so I feel your pain. We tried to eat out that way last weekend. But I just wanted to share a different perspective. My husband and I actually met 40 years ago waiting tables. He was in dental school. I was an undergrad. And back then, the base pay was $201 an hour. But for so many reasons, you know, the tips. And we met at a Chi-Chi's. That's where we work. So it wasn't a high-end restaurant. But it allowed us to go to school. It allowed us to pay our rent. The customer service skills that we learned. I mean, I would recommend any college kid coming home to wait tables. You know, the money is awesome. You go to restaurants, you tip. I go to restaurants, I tip. Even if you have, you know, a lower end, low check average, you have 4 or 5 tables, you know, do the math. You know, you're bringing in, I mean, my first job out of graduate school with a master's degree paid less annually than I was making waiting tables.
But see, that's a great story, Kathleen, and I love it because it's part of the great American tradition, and all of us listening can relate to you and your husband, and I'm delighted and congratulate you for almost a half century together. The problem is now the kids that were like you and your husband back in the day, they're opting to stay home and collect this extended unemployment. I mean, how does that figure in your thinking?
It's jarring to us. You know, I also, you know, we have a medical family. My daughter is a nurse at, you know, she works at Sidemen. And her, you know, her pain, you know, she was working last year as an aide while she was getting her master's degree. So the money wasn't great. But again, looking to the future, they're having the same problems getting nurse's aides because, you know, what do you do with a generation that doesn't want to go to work? Like when I was in undergrad and graduate school, my husband and I both were raised by single moms. We were, for, you know, first generations, both of us to go to college. We have grit. I was tired my whole life. I mean, I was sleeping 4 hours a night, you know, studying while
How many kids did you end up having?
So we have two daughters, 31 and 26. Yeah.
And they both medical profession?
Yeah. So my, yes, they both are. Having said that, they don't have our grit.
don't tell them that this morning.
They're lovely, hardworking, wonderful. But yeah, so you're
grit
tired
is important. I preach grit to my children and anyone who cares about what I have to say. And Kathleen,
so
you were delightful.
Thank you. Well, what do you do with people that want to sit home? These are good. I mean, the waitressing jobs.
I think you have to gently shame them. Gently say, you'll never become anything. Even if you are kept whole by this unemployment insurance, no opportunity will present itself. You'll find no life is all about the choices you make, the options that you have. The reason you work hard is so you have more options. If your only option is to stay home and play video games or try to work someplace off the books so you can scam the government, I think that is the recipe for a very mediocre future. You got to get out there, carpe diem, seize the day. I got to go to the news break. Kathleen, good luck to you. Thank you for your story. Delighted that you joined me on this rainy Monday morning. I kind of like rain on Monday. It's kind of sets the tone. But Rob, how did you like hearing from Kathleen that you have no grit?
Well, I know she meant well. I know she sounded nice. She sounded like her heart was in the right place. But she could not have been any more wrong on that one. I'm getting sick and tired of hearing about the millennials not having any grit. First off, we were the largest chunk of this workforce before the pandemic. We're now the smallest because most of us got fired. Not to mention, too, here's what we've had to deal with. Columbine, 9/11, the war in Afghanistan, the housing bubble, mass shootings, and now we've got a huge pandemic to deal with its own economic fallout. We have been dealing with stuff ever since Columbine happened when I was 14 years old. That has shaped my entire life past that. We have dealt with mass shootings. We have dealt, speaking as a millennial, we feel real let down by the generations above us. And I know Kathleen was talking about paying for college with a server rate. You know, you get 4 or 5 tables a shift, 10 to 15 bucks an hour, or 10 to 15 bucks for a tip. You're only talking about 60 bucks, 70 bucks a day. Good luck paying for a $30,000 college education with that. College has gone up 3,000% in the last 50 years.
So what do you think about forgiving college loans?
Yes. Yes. Maybe not completely. Maybe we got to find a happy medium that we can just absorb some of this cost. But, you know, the fact that we are being told by all of, you know, teachers, parents, adults, go out and get educated. You'll be a better person. You'll get a better career. I know a lot of people who spend a lot of money on college just to go work a $10 an hour job.
Yeah, but I have to say, I've worked my whole life too. And yeah. I hear you and I understand. And a lot of millennials I know they're bitter because the baby boomers drove up the price of houses and baby boomers
and
had two houses
yes.
and so forth and so on. But grit is, I get it. You are arguing a structural reality. And I understand and I sympathize. Seriously, I'm not being facetious.
Oh.
I totally sympathize. But grit requires activity despite disappointment. What grit is when you get knocked down and you pick yourself up and you go, I think that what this extended unemployment has done, and these other programs, many of them, what they have done, is to eliminate the great mechanism of the enterprise system where hard work is generally regarded and rewarded well by business.
Geraldo, you said it right there, rewarded. What does it say about the minimum wage and about the economic structure we have going that you can literally go on a breadline right now, you can go for government benefits and make more money than you were busting your butt?
Well,
that's why I don't fault these guys for doing it.
Whether you fault them or not, the problem is that they remove themselves from the great machine of enterprise. They get by. But, you know, life is about more than getting by. And I always believed, and I totally believe it today, as I advocate for a $15 minimum wage, I believe that the greatest civil right that you can give to anybody in this country is a well-paying job with good benefits, job security, and a high-end, a place to grow. For promotion is possible, where promotion is the goal. That's the civil right. And that's the one thing Trump did well. And, you know, what Biden is trying to do it is not with the engine of enterprise. He's trying to do it with the money in the public treasury, and we're going to have the consequences. Anyway, enough about that. I didn't mean to go off. But where's my friend from? Oh, Jeff Shump from Port Clinton. Oh, he did call. I was heading your way on my boat yesterday. I wanted to go to the Catawba Island Boat Show, but I started late. I was with my buddy Noel. We got halfway there, and I said, you know, we're not going to make it. We have a dinner, you know, at 5:30 with Eric. I got to come back. So, but it was beautiful out. I hope that you had a nice weekend in Port Clinton. What's on your mind today?
Oh, well, hey, thank you, Geraldo. And, you know, the weather, the wind and waves weren't conducive to happy boating anyway.
It was, a little smashy heading west.
Yeah, and, you know, the wind was supposed to subside by early afternoon yesterday, and they, you know, they really truly wouldn't. But you know what? We needed a breath of fresh air, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. So what's up?
Look, first, unemployment. I could tell you right now. And you know what? There is some grit out there, believe me, you know, and, you know, the millennials and so forth. I don't want to categorize. But I will tell you this, pal. There are people out there getting unemployment that haven't worked in well over a year. I have a grandson, okay? He gets a stimulus check. He hasn't worked. Now, he's 18. He hasn't worked at all in a paying job, all right? Now, that being aside, I know people that have been unemployed that are in recovery programs, so forth, so on, you know, in transition, that are getting unemployment checks, okay? And they haven't worked in a while. Now, that being said, let me on loans, student loans. Who signed on the dotted line to get that loan?
The kid.
Was it the government? Thank you. Who owes that money? You know, look.
The kid.
I worked hard all my life, just like you. And you know what? I'm not casting aspersions on millennials or anybody. But you know what? You signed for it. You pay for it. And the reason why there's optimism is because the light at the end of the tunnel for this current administration is we're going to pay for your education. Bull, you know what.
Okay. Bull, all right. So, all right, Jeff, I got to move on, but thank you for your clear-headed thoughts. Brandon in Elyria, what's on your mind, Brandon?
Oh, so much.
Start at the NFL versus the Oscars.
Yeah, the Oscars was a complete wash this year because nobody saw any movies last year, so nobody cared at all about the Oscars. Of course, why would they care? They didn't see any movies other than what they saw on Netflix. But the NFL draft is not about what happened last year. It's about what people are looking forward to. So, of course, it had a higher – of course it did. But then in sports in general, I don't know why people like sports. I think they're stupid. But, you know, if you want to watch, you know, a bunch of overgrown, you know, steroid freaks beat each other up every week, more power to you. but now here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. Everything that you've said since then has made my head want to explode. Everybody says Chicago, 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 Chicago. Chicago doesn't even break into the top 25 as far as the murder rate goes, right?
Per capita, yeah.
And yes, the murder rate is high.
But that's a false statistic where it comes to Chicago. Because in Chicago, they give you the per capita of the city's population. Chicago, half of Chicago has no crime.
Everywhere. What you're saying right now.
The white people part of Chicago, the middle class and upper class part of Chicago, they have very little crime. All the crime is concentrated on the south side
of Chicago. What it is it's the economically advantaged parts of Chicago that don't have crime.
I think it's more than that. You have the gang riddled south side. It's more than just economics. It's social structure.
WCAM every day. I listen to conservative media in general quite frequently, even though I'm not a conservative, because I want to know what conservatives are thinking. But we got to look at the facts. And the facts are that conservative media talks about Chicago, New York, and L.A. And they don't bring up Tulsa, Miami, Jacksonville. They don't bring up
Memphis, Nashville, New Orleans.
They don't bring up, you know, they don't bring
Cleveland.
Up GOP controlled cities in GOP controlled states.
Well, there aren't very many of those.
GOP controlled representation.
All right, Brandon, I got to go, but I appreciate your thoughtfulness. In Wadsworth, Mike, what's up, Mike?
Hi, Geraldo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I have one point to make in a second, if time allows, but I'll start with the first one. Has anyone ever discussed anything like an accrual system for unemployment? So with most jobs, you start with a week's of vacation, and then after 5 years, you get maybe a second week, and 10 years, you get a third week.
That's the way it used to be. I wonder if it still is that way.
Yeah, well, a lot of places are, but... I know, you know, what if it could either go by age or maybe the number of years that you contributed to, like, Social Security taxes. But when you're 18, say, you accrue your first week of unemployment allowance, and then you get every year after that.
I like that. I like
week.
The earned unemployment is a good idea. But the Democrats don't like earned.
I understand.
They're not about earned. I mean, that's the whole philosophy now is let's throw a ton of money. And we could be a transformative president. We can be FDR. That's Biden. That's the editorials that I see. He wants to really remake America in the way that Franklin Roosevelt remade America by spending enormous amounts of public money. Hey, listen, he might have the right idea. I don't know. But it just seems to me, just as a logical person, that if you disincentivize, you know, unemployment insurance is really important to many people who get caught on the short end of the stick, like the people who are being laid off when the pandemic hit. But now everybody's in a hiring mode, and he's doing too much too late, it seems to me, because these anecdotal stories that I'm telling you are far too widespread to just be, you know, anecdotes. This is the trend. There are too many people collecting unemployment who should be working, and as a result, legitimate businesses are suffering because they can't find employees. But it's also true what Rob said. It's time to reassess how much money we pay these people, because if unemployment is more competitive than their salary, then maybe it's their salary that has to go up. We have to disincentivize them to collect unemployment insurance. And if they're lazy ass, you know, sitting in mama's basement in the basement, as a couch in the basement, then, you know, I think that it's time to kick them off the couch. Kick them off the couch. I don't know if you heard, but I was complaining about our going to the restaurants yesterday and no staff being available. So despite the fact that the restaurants were, in some cases, more than half empty and the seats were infuriatingly right in front of us, they would not seat us because they had no staff. Why do they have no staff? Because the staff is home on unemployment insurance. My point is, your beloved Joe Biden's program has backfired, and this this rush to throw money at people has in some ways discombobulated the system, the enterprise system, the capitalist system. Now nobody wants to work. Well, not nobody, that's an exaggeration. Many people, particularly young people, are staying home because their unemployment insurance basically matches their salary. Did Joe Biden make a mistake? What do you think, Erica?
Well, take a look at the market today. How are we doing? I think we're doing pretty well. And I think that people are using that money, they're spending it because they didn't have it in the first place. And this has been an unprecedented year. People have lost their jobs and could not. I have a lot of girlfriends and their husbands who have lost their jobs this past year and cannot get a new job. And there are people that are working 2-3 jobs to make ends meet, and then their kids are also home from school, and they don't have money to put the power on in their house and have food on the table. They need that money. And now people are spending it as soon as they get it, and it's going back into the economy.
What about the argument, yes, they need that money, why don't they go earn it and maybe have a job where you can get a promotion, maybe where extra work results in extra income? You know, the American system.
Well, yeah, that's true. Look, I always worked jobs from high school into college. I always had two jobs going, one unpaid that was in television and one paid job, so I could afford my unpaid job. And I worked as a waitress. I made so much money at Champ Sports Bar here in Cleveland. I worked double shifts. I made enough money on my own so that I could move to Manhattan and live in a basement apartment with no windows. And it was the time of my life. And I did that all on my own. But you know, a lot of people could not get jobs this past year. Maybe those restaurants weren't hiring.
But, you know, humor me.
Okay.
There are many people now who are choosing not to work because they are getting paid almost as much on unemployment insurance. Now, is that person A, smart, sharp, and using the system, or are they B, lazy?
I don't understand what you're saying. I mean, no, I think that it's fine for right now. I think it's better to give people more money right now. Maybe not in a few years from now, but for right now, when we're still in this plague, and it's not a normal environment for people to go to work and get a job, that people need extra money.
Well, I think that you are a fair, very fair person. That's why I appreciate your opinion, you know, on a regular basis. And I hear you now, and you're very sympathetic and compassionate, and all that's good. I think that there's going to be a huge blowback if by this summer those kids, particularly the young people who work in the resorts and the restaurants and so forth, if this phenomenon still persists and employers can't find employees, I think that there's going to be a blowback, and it'll be like the Ronald Reagan era where he talked about welfare queens. There's going to be a real sharp distinction between those who are working, gainfully employed, and participating, even with all the struggles, even with the underpay, even with all the things that classically workers in America have had to face and surmount. There's going to be, if they don't go to work eventually, there's going to be a real blowback, and people are going to look very scornfully. So at least you have a job, Rob. I mean,
yeah, I got more jobs than I can count
now. You're like in living color. Man, how many jobs you got? Like my dad. How many jobs you got? Well, I'm the pilot. I'm the stewardess. I'm the mechanic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, pretty much.
All right. Well, I appreciate all the jobs you do for us. And thank you, folks. We appreciate your listening. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. I get that every generation faces its own challenge, but how ironic it is that the challenge right now for at least part of this generation, at least part of the time, at least right now, is balancing available benefits with the rigors of getting a job. I'm Geraldo Rivera reporting Roadkill.
Roadkill with Geraldo Rivera.